Next, we'll move to this 2019 fire season update.
Good morning, Chair Iverson, members of the committee, members of the board, State Forester Daugherty. For the record, my name is Doug Graff. I serve as the Chief of Fire Protection. And I'm pleased today to announce to my right, Blake Ellis will be joining me for the past 2 years. I've been trying to get him in front of the board as he serves as a fire operations manager. So that's a good sign that he's here for a brief to the board on fire season update. Blake has served with the state for 12 years, currently serves as a protection supervisor at a North Cascade district. He's called, answered the call for support at the staff level for fire operations manager for the past 2 years. Last year initiated a two-deputy chief model to handle capacity and workload given the 2018 fire season, where Blake filled in as a fire operations manager. And this year, we had a late retirement early in the season on fire operations manager. And once again, Blake answered the call to support staff. So a lot of respect for Blake and a good opportunity to have a conversation with the fire operations manager and the board today. Blake also served relevant to this fire season as incident commander on the Sandy M Park fire that you may recall. That was an early season fire in March, close to 200 acres, 40 homes threatened immediately. Number of partners engaged in that firefight early season. Really good work there. It was interesting. I don't recall in the past, the legislature passing a resolution of appreciation for effort on a fire, and that occurred based on Sandy M Park fire early this season. So that's one for you to hold tight there, Blake. Good work as the incident commander. And also today, in our standard report out to the board, ask for some active engagement, which would be new today. We would like to recognize members available who are not in school of a scout troop who engaged in fire protection suppression effort this summer. So we'll be announcing that and be asking that group to come up and meet the board through the presentation today. With that, Blake will take us through the report, and I'll close the last couple slides.
Morning, folks. For the record, Blake Ellis. I serve as the fire operations manager. So real quick, want to hit on the cover photo here. That's the Gaida Lane Fire, Southwest Oregon District, August 27th, so about a week ago. And as I'm sure you can recall, we had a kind of a heat wave. And just to paint the picture here, it was about 105 degrees at the time that this fire took off. Relative humidities were in the very low teens, making it very, very difficult to catch any new start. However, I think that this photo and this fire truly exemplifies the success of initial attack by our ground crews this summer. They were able to quickly suppress this fire, catch it at 54 acres, you know, several heavy air tankers, several helicopters, and ground crews attacked this fire. So definitely a success story there. So we'll go ahead and start off with the national significant fire potential. You're all aware of the projections coming into this season were for above normal fire potential for the majority of Oregon, especially on the west side. Despite the elevated fire potential in August, fire activity lagged below average. We did have substantial lightning events occur August 7th through the 10th, which would normally lead to increased initial attack. However, we did get fairly decent precipitation along with those storms. So the majority of the fires, all but one, were suppressed at 10 acres or less. So that was definitely helpful. So for August, we were showing that that elevated fire potential. Moving into September, you can see that the the potential for Oregon drops to normal risk. However, normal risk for September in Western Oregon is still very high for us. That's when we're going to see our east winds come over the mountains, drop the relative humidities, live woody fuel moistures are going to plummet. So that's really when Western Oregon is going to be at the height of their fire danger. Another note here is you can see somehow the fire danger goes from, you know, elevated above normal to just normal right at that border. I don't know the mechanics behind that, but something seems a little off. You know, something doesn't smell right there for me personally. So anytime you see something like that, you just know that there is elevated potential up into southwest Oregon. So we're not out of the woods yet. And then moving into October, again, we're showing elevated potential in Northern California. And again, same story there. Fire doesn't recognize imaginary borders on a map. So just awareness for you there. Let's see here. Are we good there? Okay. Looking at the weather outlook for the next 8 to 14 days, we're showing for precipitation, normal to slightly above normal precip for the next 8 to 14 days in September, right? And the average for September is 0.7 inches. So, you know, looking at maybe getting about an inch of rain throughout the month of September. However, talking to our chief meteorologist, Nick Yonker, just this morning, he's not sure how confident he is in this prediction. He was kind of leaning towards less precipitation, so normal to less than normal. So, and then moving to the temperature right here, as you can see, the majority of the state is projected for above average temperature, sliding to slightly above in southwest Oregon. Looking at our drought monitor, you're all well aware of this. This has been a persistent issue that we've been monitoring the last several years. Let's see here. We're looking at abnormally dry for the majority of Western Oregon, moving up into North Central Oregon, with moderate drought actually in Northwest Oregon. This is going to definitely play a factor in the story that this fire season is definitely going to tell as we look into September and moving into October. Again, east winds during the fall are usually very prevalent in the Northwest Oregon area. So we'll continue to monitor that as we move into September. Again, east winds with low relative humidities and live woody fuel moistures dropping exponentially. Looking at our fire statistics to date, or as of yesterday, we've currently kept 96% of our fires at 10 acres or less. I know our key performance measures is 98, and we'll continue to strive for that. But I think this is definitely a very successful season for us thus far, and we'll continue to hammer away at those initial attack starts. Looking at 23% less lightning fires this year than last year. So this is a comparison to last year. 23% less lightning fires, 97% less lightning acres. So that's significant. And then 78% less total acres burned than this time last year. Looking at this summer versus our 10-year average, 1% less total fires than average. So we're right on par with our 10-year average for fire starts. 11% more human-caused fires. Definitely going to need to get to the bottom of that and see what we can do with our partners with KOG to see if we can't stop that increase. But 28% less lightning fires. 63% more human acres, and that's attributed to the 13,119 acres on the milepost 97 fire in southern Douglas County. overall, we're at 59% less acres burned than our 10-year average. So fantastic job by our initial attack crews, coupled with, quite honestly, favorable weather conditions that we've experienced this summer. So pretty good success story all around. Another note to throw in here, shoulder season. So before our proper fire season kicked off, we were able to support our compact partners, and those are the, let's see here, Yukon, Saskatchewan, Alberta, British Columbia, Northwest Territories, Alaska, Washington, Montana, and Idaho. So our kind of our close partners, proximity-wise, we were able to help those fire agencies with their earlier fire starts. We exported 72 ODF resources in total, and that included to Alaska, Washington, and Alberta, Canada. This provides great training opportunities and experience for folks that are trying to continue to grow their fire qualifications or keep currency so that they don't lose those qualifications once fire season does start in Oregon. So very valuable. And of note also, those same compact partners have come to our aid the last several years. So kind of a stroke of good neighborship here and helping folks out that have helped us in the past. Moving to our fantastic large fire map that TZA produces for us. A couple of fires to highlight here. Of course, the Milepost 97 fire, 13,119 acres. Just a quick note on this, absolutely phenomenal job by our ODF Team 3 on catching this fire, minimizing costs and minimizing acres. Truly a success story there. The second team deployment that we did have this summer was on the Ward Fire in Klamath County, 1,301 acres. That was August 9th. A couple other key fires to highlight, the East Evans Creek Fire, 156 acres, another really good initial attack catch by Southwest Oregon. The Medco B fire, again, early this year, that was May 4th, again in Southwest Oregon, 345 acres. And then some of our federal counterpart fires that we have supported on, the 163 HK complex, early August, was 2,712 acres. And then two fires that we're currently monitoring are the Cow Fire, which is actually over 8,000 acres now, listening into the latest intelligence this morning. They completed a burnout, really solidified some lines on that fire, and they're actually turning it over to a Type 3 NEMO team. So things are looking really good on that Cow Fire. And the Granite Gulch Fire up in the Eagle Cap Wilderness, being utilized as a resource benefit fire, really good positive things coming out of that fire. So we'll continue to monitor these fires, but right now these fires are doing what they should be doing, and that's, you know, maintaining a clean forest and utilizing fire for good. So,
Blake, I would add specifically on both the Cow and Granite Gulch, those are burning entirely on the Forest Service, being managed by the Forest Service. I detailed both those fires for awareness in my last report to you.
Of note, there is there's one fire that's missing, and no one's even ever going to know the name of this fire, and that's because a Boy Scout troop was up hiking in the up in the wilderness and happened upon this. Tom Fields, can you help me out here? We actually have a couple of them with us today.
Good morning, Chair Emerson, members of the board, State Forester Doherty. My name is Tom Fields. I'm the Fire Prevention Coordinator for the Oregon Department of Forestry, proud member of Team 3 on the Milepost 97 fire. And I would also be remiss if I didn't mention that July and August human-caused fires were well below average and acres burned as well. So had to throw in that little tidbit. You bet. This morning, though, more importantly, It is my pleasure to recognize Boy Scout Troop 50 from Staten and Sublimity from recently acting above the call of duty in fire prevention. On day two of their hike into Mulock Lake within the Willamette National Forest, the scouts came across an escape campfire about 200 square feet in size, creeping along the ground. Like a fine oiled machine of several moving parts, the scouts grabbed water bottles, hand shovels, and other supplies to take action. The troop formed a bucket brigade, shuttling between 150 and 200 gallons of water to put the fire out. In all, they spent about 2 hours drowning the fire and scraping hand line with hand shovels around the perimeter. They made sure the fire was dead out before leaving and then proceeded to report the incident to the Forest Service. While we don't normally condone the public taking action on a fire, the scouts' swift action prevented this fire from becoming a major wildfire. So on behalf of Oregon Department of Forestry, Keep Oregon Green, and our many partners in fire prevention, I am honored to present tokens of our appreciation to Boy Scout Troop 50. Thank you. It is my pleasure to present our challenge coins from Oregon Department of Forestry to your troop, as well as we know patches are very important to Boy Scouts, so a patch from Keep Oregon Green, and certificates of appreciation from Oregon Department of Forestry and Keep Oregon Green for your efforts in preventing fires from occurring. Thank you so much for your actions. Thank you.
I would also like to really quickly recognize Scott West, their scoutmaster and a unit forester on the Mullally unit in North Cascade District. Thank you for providing a good foundation for these young men. Thank you. Alrighty. Moving to the air quality checkup. As of September 2nd, statewide air quality is really good. Really, there was only one event of unhealthy air quality, and that was centered around the Milepost 97 fire for a couple days. The wind pattern did shift on that fire with a northerly wind, and if you get a fire in this area with a north wind, it's going to settle right into that Rogue Valley. And so we did have a minor intrusion, I would say, of moderate to unhealthy for sensitive groups air quality in the Rogue Valley. Luckily, we did have a wind shift a couple days after that, and that valley was cleared out, and we really haven't had any issues since then. So Pretty good summer for air quality compared to last summer, which.
Yeah, I would just add the relative terms there compared to what we've been experiencing, very favorable. But once again, a heightened awareness of folks in Southwest Oregon, definitely impactful. And there was certainly concerns on the Milepost 97 from the smoke events. But fortunately, as Blake highlighted, there was some wind shifts that did help that out and scour out the air and bring some clean air. But There was definitely folks suffering once again at times.
Thank you, Doug. Moving to a technology update, and this is some pretty cool cutting edge stuff for you. So Strategic Investments procured, and we are currently installing infrared technology on our agency-owned Partnavia aircraft. Should quite possibly be available late this fire season, most likely early next fire season. And so what that'll do is that'll actually be available to fly after a lightning storm goes through, be able to fly and detect lightning fires and enable us to initial attack those fires quicker, resulting in less acres lost and financially less dollars spent. So really some forward-thinking technology here. Another area to highlight is nighttime seat operations, so single engine air tankers. This is some really cutting edge stuff. And I'll read a snippet from our aviation manager, Neil Loggle. He was contacted about a year ago by Colorado Fire to gauge interest in our participation there. They spent the winter, fall and winter of last year training and developing risk assessments and operating parameters. Colorado Center for Excellence was involved with co-fire training in Colorado. Information will be shared with Colorado Center of Excellence. LA County currently uses Black Hawk helicopters for nighttime suppression operations, and Cal Fire is exploring the possibility when they can acquire Black Hawk helicopters. As far as I know, though, in terms of nighttime seat operations, we're going to be the first one in the continental United States should we choose to move forward with that to employ that. This is going to be done in several phases. The first phase was the airport testing, so nighttime testing of taking off and landing and making sure that lighting was correct. That's been completed. The second phase was the field site testing, and that's actually taking boots on the ground and determining with night vision goggles for the pilots what works best to identify the crews on the ground to maintain safety for their crews. That has also been completed, and it was quite successful. Moving forward to an evaluation phase, the project was a success. There are concerns regarding firefighter safety, and we proved that they can be mitigated. Effectiveness of water drops at night were evident, you know, less wind, so the drift of the drops was reduced, you know. So next steps is going to be to continue to work with our federal partners, updating policy and procedures, and consideration on when ODF will implement night seat operations. So this is going to be an evolving topic, and definitely something that you'll hear more about. So definitely a tool in the toolbox for the right place and time. And we'll continue to evaluate and kind of move slow to implement this, but definitely the future of aviation. So another key point in terms of technology, we brought in the Colorado multi-mission aircraft this summer. Let's see here. In early August, we had a thunderstorm that put down over 14,000 lightning strikes in central and eastern Oregon. Utilizing this multi-mission aircraft, much like we're gearing our Partnavia to do, we were able to identify seven fires that were in remote areas, probably would not have been detected for a couple days, giving them the opportunity to grow both in terms of acreage and cost to suppress the fires, as well as safety hazards for firefighters on the ground. So we were able to mitigate those safety hazards, reduce costs and acres by bringing in this Colorado multi-mission aircraft. Cost was relatively cheap. Actually, it was under $90,000 to bring this in, and when you couple that with the cost of large fires, it was, in my opinion, a good stroke of business.
I would add for the board, we've used the Colorado ship for several years, have consistently ordered them. That haven't always been available as needed. We also have local contractors with this capability that we utilize on fires and for early detection, both in the drone capacity and then staffed aircraft.
When you say multi-mission aircraft, What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so multiple mission capabilities while they're in the air. So they can do recon for intelligence gathering for active fire, or downloading the infrared data to dispatch centers and moving on from that site and just dropping that information off, and then the initial attack action can take on. So they provide a variety of services while in the air. For the PratNavia aircraft, the multi-mission capability will be if we detect a fire that needs air attack services over the fire, to be the air traffic control to bring in other aviation assets. That's another mission capability that the aircraft would be able to perform, specifically the PratNavia. We didn't staff the Colorado multi-mission aircraft for that capacity, but the intent at times with the PratNavia will be to service in that way also.
Another tool in the toolbox. Moving to our safety update, these are reported injuries from July 1st to current. Total 20 injuries. Half of those were miscellaneous causes, and that's poison oak, smoke inhalation, five strains, vehicle versus vehicle and lifting, three slips, trips, and falls, and two were struck by bees and rolling debris. So, in total, we've had three yellow sheets. That's the new reporting mechanism that we've developed internally for distribution and information sharing. Three yellow sheets. Two of those were struck by rolling debris and a snag strike. Rolling debris injury occurred on the Milepost 97 fire. A rock pretty much rolled down the slope, struck the individual in the back of the head, knocked him unconscious. Individual was life flighted to Portland, where he regained consciousness and was released that night. So good deal there. The snag strike, unfortunately, has not been so fortunate. Individual on East Evans Creek fire in Medford on a private contract crew was struck by a falling snag. That individual is still in the hospital and still in serious condition. And we continue to pray for that individual. So, and then with the other yellow sheet was a vehicle versus vehicle. Our crew vehicle in Southwest Oregon was traveling down a highway when the passing by vehicle actually lost control of their vehicle and made impact with our agency vehicle. So that warranted a yellow sheet. Anything to add there? Okay. And then one thing to highlight, our fire managers out on the line are really trying to implement this take five at two. That's a concept of all the, or the majority of fire line fatalities due to fire behavior have occurred from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And that's when you're going to see a rise in temperatures, drop in humidities and wind shifts. So really this is a strategic pause to take a stop and really think about safety. Something that again, we've been implementing on a lot of our large fires. So these are the numbers for FY19. Let's see here. In terms of exposure hours, we were at 1,659,432 hours, and our five-year average is 1,623,123. So we had more exposure hours last summer. We knew that coming into this season. We had a lot of fire on the landscape. And a lot of boots on the ground. So higher exposure hours, which led to 69 total reportable injuries. Our five-year average is 68, so just slightly above our five-year average there. And our five-year average for the 200,000 hours worked, which is the agency standard or the industry standard, is 8.4. And last year we were at 8.32. So again, right on par there. So
Board Member Rose, this is in response to a couple of your questions in previous previous presentations. We added the prior slide to give kind of real-time data currently where we sit on this fire season. And then this would be the industry standard slide. The data catches up that we get from Department of Administrative Services, terms of exposures, hours, et cetera. So we are, this slide would be lagged, and that's what we presented last time. So we added that front slide on the front end to see the real time. So we just closed fiscal year 2019, and that runs through June 30th, 2019.
I appreciate the information. You know, we all want everybody to go home safe, and I think looking back, this has never been brought out before, and I think the more attention that we bring to this, the better it'll be as we put light on it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. This will be a part of our presentation moving forward, as it has been. So.
And so one other key thing to hone in on, right now we're projecting in terms of exposure hours, somewhere very, you know, just slightly below 2018. So exposure hours have gone down this summer, and that's evident by the reduced number of fires on the landscape that we've been engaged on. And that shows in our total injuries being at 20. So kind of on par for exposure hours per injury per exposure hour. So.
Okay, thank you, Blake. I'll close. I'm looking at time, so we're right there, so I'll tighten up just the last couple slides. Really updated our financial slide to look at really the pivot point and the change in fire seasons here in Oregon, which is clearly 2013. So as we look at the financials and gross costs, what we spend in terms of fighting fire in our jurisdictional responsibilities, we're averaging in the range of $60+ million prior to 2013, $9.7 million. I added 2019 fire season in here. We still have time to go on this, so I would expect that average to adjust. I hope it holds right there and does not move, but that's not a guarantee I can make today. But wanted to shed light on that seven-year average kind of as a pivot point of how the world changed. And structurally, the system isn't built for that. We, at the beginning of every fire season, have available $10 million from the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, which has been there, as State Forest Authority highlighted, for a 50-year anniversary of that relationship. And we're very fortunate to have that. And the other dollars, of course, we carry that cash until reimbursement from FEMA or from other agency billings. And we all know the capacity issue in terms of processing these types of dollars through a system that was built for prior to 13. So this slide just provides what we all know, and we've talked with the board in our effort with the agency initiative, which has moved to the Governor's Council, just reinforcing the change in dynamic that we've all experienced here in Oregon. I'd also highlight for the board as we move towards the legislative days. Now, this is a lot of verbiage, but I put it in your packet just to raise awareness. We do report out to the legislature as required by law every season, and that begins September, November legislative days. We have been presenting in September because of the engagement and activity fire seasons, but given this year, we'll simply go to the November time where I have more final numbers to close out. So we worked with the Legislative Fiscal Office on timing of that. So one nuance there, our final report will be delivered in November, not a preliminary report like we've had in the past in September. So there's certainly a legislative engagement to close out fire season. And then we always end here with absolute recognition that this department does not operate alone and would be incapable of providing fire protection to this state without the many partners that we engage in. Contractors play a critical role. our landowners, forest operators, the local fire service departments, city and rural departments. Absolutely critical that we provide a complete and coordinated fire protection system. And now I need to add the scout troop to this list for their service. So with that, I'll close.
Chair Imeson, State Forester Doherty, board members, Keith Williams, Vice President of Resources for Stimson Lumber Company. And I'm here today to simply say thank you to the ODF staff. I want to let the board know, as a significant landowner in Northwest Oregon, Stimson's been around for a long time. Our land ownership goes back nearly 100 years in Oregon. We've been partnering with ODF for a long time. Long time meaning about 85 years. We really appreciate the staff. We appreciate their preparedness. We appreciate the resources and the focus that staff has around fire. Of the four states that Stimson operates in, we regard ODF staff as best in class and far and above other state agencies that we work with. We do maintain our own some trucks, tankers in Forest Grove and Tillamook, and we are delighted to partner with ODF on fires. We appreciate their responsiveness most of the time. They're there before we are. That's not always true, and we love to have the race to see who gets there first. But I wanted to let the board know how thankful Stimson Lumber Company is for the continued year after year after year focus on fires. Thanks.
At the Forest Trust Land Advisory Committee recently, similar comments about the 97 fire in particular. We know it. We don't always hear it, and we really appreciate it, your recognition that you provided.